Sounds right.
Yeah. Okay. Now, the approval of the gen. Oh, in the reading. Oh, sorry. Sorry. I didn't mean I have to, but nobody in this committee will read it. Anybody want to take a stab at it? No, they never do. Okay.
That's right.
Yeah. So, we acknowledge and honor the Aboriginal people on whose ancestral homelands we live. The Irkutsum band, I think I said that wrong, of the Shiesta Nation, including the original past Indigenous inhabitants, as well as the diverse Native communities who make their home here today. We also recognize and acknowledge the Shasta village of Kwakaka, where the crow lights, that is now the Ashland City Plaza. Okay, the approval of the agenda, we have a really important presentation coming tonight as a result, and I will let our guest talk about what she's going to talk about, but it involves historic preservation as a means of tourism and promoting tourism, which is in our charter. So I am the with if there's no objection, when we come to public forums, it's usually the rules are you only have 5 minutes. And if there's no objection, I'd like to give her 15 to allow a presentation as well as having time for questions and answers. And then she can tell you all these goodies you've been wanting to pick up. If there is no objection, can we just proceed with that understanding?
And
Okay.
then I was going to mention, I don't know if you already had a note on it, but we do have Charwin Helmer from ODOT here that
Yes.
wanted to talk about the
Okay.
curb ramp treatments in the historic district. And that's something that came in after your packet had been distributed.
Right.
So I
And
passed out a document she prepared explaining it, and I have
oh.
some photos in the PowerPoint if you want to touch on that earlier in the agenda or
Yeah.
take it to just agenda
Yeah.
items. It doesn't look like the applicants for 38 East Main are here, so we may be able to just deal with that item since you guys have seen it a couple times.
Is Charlotte okay with waiting till after our first presentation?
Yes, I'm flexible. I just got here a little early, so I'm ready when you need me. No hurry on
Well,
my account.
we appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I can't see Helmer is her last name. Okay, great.
And then I did also, I can do it either in my staff report or discussion item at the end. Just wanted to talk about a
Yes.
procedural issue with 774 B Street.
Which came to a sad end.
Yes.
Okay. That's a teaser. Anyway, has everybody had a chance to look at the minutes? Yeah. There's no corrections or additions, could someone move to approve the minutes?
Move to approve the minutes.
Okay. Is there a second?
I will second.
Thank you. All those in favor, say aye. Okay, moving on. So now, where would you like to? Do you want to be by the PowerPoint?
It's wherever you want me to be.
Well, I'd like you to be able to sit there where, yeah, why don't you come up here? And so I'm going to let, this is Maureen Battistella, who works with the University of Oregon and knows and does all kinds of projects on Oregon history, which is a really amazing amount of work. Yes, right here. And yes, but these are great. These are such great ones.
They
They're old
are.
posters, right?
No, they're pair box
Pair
lights.
box, I mean. Yeah, they're the boxes, but oh well. So, Maureen, why don't you first identify how you're involved in Southern Oregon history?
Hey, first of all, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity today to speak with you. And more, I'd like to thank you as commissioners for the important work that you do. There's so much tension between historic preservation and heritage advocacy and development. And I find that the balance is beautiful in here in Ashland as compared to many of the other towns that I work with in Southern Oregon. So thank you for that.
Nice to know.
Yeah. So I have a faculty appointment at Southern Oregon University in the Sociology and Anthropology program. My work there, my research involves community documentation, oral history, and heritage preservation. I've worked with many towns throughout Southern Oregon to digitize the work. I can speak up. To digitize important and historic documents that relate to their time, to their town. 2 years ago, it was Cave Junction and the Illinois Valley. Last year, it was Phoenix. This year, it's Rogue River. Next year, it's Butte Falls. So what you see around here are just some examples of work that collaboratively many people have put together. Further, some of these things on the table are from the Southern Oregon Digital Archives at Southern Oregon University, including Sue Namas's Pear Box label collection that she allowed us to digitize. So these photos are here for your
and these
your
are
pleasure.
That Terry,
I was going to say
these are ones that Terry's Jimmy. You were able to get a large amount of his photographs. Is that right?
One of the projects involved some of Terry's photographs.
Same.
The reason I'm here today, though, there are actually 3 points that I'd like to bring up. First, Travel Southern Oregon funded a group of us to develop some materials on heritage tourism. This is the first time that Travel Southern Oregon has funded heritage in their awareness. And so I'm ecstatic to look at this collaboration between heritage advocacy and tourism, both at the regional level as well as at the state level, and to work with the communities around Southern Oregon about how we can kind of work together to look at the intersection of heritage and tourism as a driver for economic development in our communities. And that's what I'm seeing with these projects that I do all around. So you've got this flyer here, and this is a flyer for the two workshops that they funded. The first one, I'm very grateful to Bev Hovenkamp, who will be speaking at that workshop as part of the keynote, to talk with city leaders, planners, tourism and hospitality professionals, and heritage advocates to look at how they can leverage heritage in order to boost tourism and boost economic development. We've got a keynote coming down from Independence, Oregon, which is a Main Street community. When you're a Main Street community, you get hundreds of thousands of dollars of funding for facade, for building restoration and renovation. So he's coming down because Independence, Oregon, way the hell out there in nowhere land, right, in fields, has leveraged heritage tourism, heritage for both economic development and tourism. He's coming down because he's got a lot of experience in how this works. So that's the first workshop on January 17th. The second workshop is on February 21st, where we're going to have some practical down-to-earth tools and mechanics about how to tell stories that are historically correct but compelling, to build audiences, to build tourism, to build those drivers to our heritage sites. So I'm thrilled at this collaboration between the Jackson County Heritage Association, which is a collaboration of about 15 museums in Southern Oregon, and Travel Southern Oregon. It's really ratcheting up our profile at the regional and state levels. The next thing I'd just like to talk to you about is the second thing that they funded. They also funded the development of a brochure. And this sorry thing was the brochure that the museums and historic sites around the county have been using for the last couple of years. It's pretty grim. And it's very inwardly focused. It's a membership. It's a member benefit corporation. So it's inwardly focused. And I'll just pass that around. If you'll notice, Ashland is not on there. So it's my obligation to you and to my community to get Ashland into this brochure It's going to be distributed and print. It's going to be printed in the thousands, distributed at the Medford Airport, at the Visitor Center south of Ashland, and also to 72 chambers and hotels around Southern Oregon. So it's going to get great exposure. We'll test that, see how it works. If it works, we're going to continue it, expand it. We're looking at Portland. We're looking at the coast. So got to get Ashland in there. As when you see this, everything is site specific, so that you go to the Talon Historical Society, which has information on the Bagley Canning company that we had here, or to Phoenix, which has information on Southern Oregon Normal School and Burt Stancliffe and Irving, the early tourism boosters. But Ashland is a problem because Ashland doesn't have a coordinated approach to heritage. You guys are the most important aspect of heritage preservation and advocacy in Ashland. And none of our stuff is anywhere here. It's all sort of farmed away to other institutions. However, we can work on that. What I would like to do with your permission is to include Ashland in here with a link to a website that has more information about Ashland's heritage. I have a couple of choices. I could link it to the Chamber of Commerce. There's no heritage information on the Chamber of Commerce website. I can link it to a commercial entity, in which case I have to figure out how I can block all the other commercial entities that are out there that want to be listed in here. Or I can link it to the Historic Preservation Committee's website here at the city. Now I'd like to pass this around, because a link to the city's website right now has some limited information, but it's scattered all over the place. If you look at this handout, what you'll see is that there's a very beautiful URL called ashland.or.us/historic, and that is the URL for a page on the city website called Historic Preservation Information. However, there's more stuff on the page that's the Historic Preservation Advisory Committee. There's more stuff on the Park Story web app website. There's more stuff in the Map Center. There's more stuff in the Public Works Cemetery Viewer. We need to consolidate all of these different kinds of city resources that are so rich, so deep, so textured with heritage and the sense of our community. Put them all on one page that says ashland.or.us/historic. That's my opinion.
Just so you know, that the marker projects that we're doing, there's one down in the railroad property, Railroad Park, have that web address on there.
Oh, perfect.
And the only reason it's perfect on our website was because when I saw the first marker go in, I said, we really ought to have a page with that address.
Perfect.
And so it got cobbled together pretty quickly.
Perfect. Great. Now, I spent some time, I do work in this area quite a bit, metadata kind of stuff. So I have some suggestions about how to aggregate and reorganize the information on the city website and add to it the stuff that's everywhere that we know about Ashland that could be readily available in not-for-profit and in free public utilities. And so on that second page, this first section here, suggested aggregation and reorganization, that first section is how you might consider reorganizing that page, whatever it's called. Historic/historic. Do your Ashland City resources first, then your Jackson County, then your Oregon resources, and then your national resources. I went through all of the resources on that historic page and found the broken links and found the referrals to the better websites, the new websites that are out there. I think the page is a little bit outdated. And also I have some suggested additions that are organized sort of geographically by from the smallest to the larger. These are the resources that you are so aware of because of the work that you do and the work that, and I'm so aware of because of the work that I do. I've said enough. I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to see what questions you have.
Well, that was very efficient and very impressive, because we have, I would remind the group that in the retreat, was it this January or a year ago January? Might have been this January.
January, yeah.
Seems like a long time ago. The retreat.
Well, it was nearly a year ago.
Yes, I guess that's true. The retreat, one of the important goals but that we wanted to see carried out was to aggregate all these different data sources in one place. And because we're aware across the city website, there's information, even some under the planning department, and some, as Maureen pointed out, with Parks and Rec, all these places. And this is a huge opportunity, it seems to me, where we're getting the gift of someone else's grant and to do the kind of thing we were hoping could be done. And Maureen has been working with digital archives a long time in Southern Oregon history, right? Yeah.
Well, not compared to the families I work with. It's only been 20 years.
Oh, well, still. Yeah, that's impressive, though. So what you're saying is we have an opportunity, or you could go with the Chamber of Commerce or something like that. But we're advisory to the council. We technically can't advocate, but I think that's what we try to do is promote historic preservation in our historic districts. So that opens the conversation up for any more questions. Because one other thing, Derek, I think you want to talk about the approval process for what might be involved for the city to approve such a thing.
So first of all, the city is in the process now of contracting to have our website completely redone. So it should be a little more modern, and all the pages are going to get looked at. So it's a perfect opportunity. And we would just need to take your suggestions through the planning staff and the city manager's office and probably the IT department. But
perfect.
Yeah.
There's so much out there. I mean, just today, I thought I knew everything about SRU. I certainly can't. But just today, I found out that in 1916, there was an entomological station that the USDA put there. So I have photos now. I mean, I found photos of that I'd never seen of the campus, the first campus out there. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
What you wrote the book about us?
I'm always learning. I'm always, That's there's great. Always stuff I don't know.
So this is an opportunity to ask Maureen questions. Any specific? Shall we?
Your new brochure, do you have a draft of that now, or are you?
Not yet.
Okay.
I know that I'll pass the draft around to the group that we're working with, and okay. Certainly I'll need to have you all approve or review and comment on the narrative
yeah.
that's associated with it. It's not many words, 50 words or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that's something that would be done. I think we want to mention the historic nature of the community, the walkable downtown, the park, the railroad district, Chautauqua,
mm-hmm.
things like that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's not much room.
No, there's not.
Everybody right. wants in. It's really, we'll have some of the other sort of non-museum type places that we want to include are like the Butte Creek Mill, which is a nonprofit.
Oh, yeah.
The Wood House out in Eagle Point, most photographed old house in Southern Oregon. And
yeah.
And, you know, there's even like a defunct, you know, the ghost town Buncombe, right? So these are non-staffed, but places of spirit, of interest. And, the other thing we want to put on there are all the historic cemeteries that are around. You know, they are public. They all, and the Jacksonville, the Rogue Valley Genealogical Society has done a lot of work. Chuck Eccles, I don't know if you know him, he's passed, but he did a lot of work documenting the local cemeteries. And the Oregon Heritage, the Oregon Commission on Historic Cemeteries has funded a couple of projects for us to develop walking guides of the historic cemeteries. We've done one for Hargadine. We've done one for Ashland. We did one for Antioch, Missouri Flat, Butte Falls. It's just fun. It's just fun, you know.
Would this be a good opportunity for us? I'm thinking about, like, I feel like, Maureen, you're looking at this from sort of a county level, you know, come to Southern Oregon and visit all our historic sites. And I wonder if us as a commission committee should be thinking about, if people are coming to Ashland, what would like a historic tour of Ashland look like? Should we also be putting together our own little...
Your name and email address?
Yeah.
You just volunteered for something.
I did.
This is so important. This is exactly what I was hoping.
Kind of come to Ashland and hear all of the things that you shouldn't miss, and then, kind of thing.
And what we talked about is promoting a public awareness of the...
You know, here's our, like, all the and medallions and things like that. If you want to tour the Lincoln and all that.
And the map projects, the Marking Ashland Place is another really kind of great model for collaboration in showing historic places with art.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about that, Canning, Lynn, and I. That's part of the presentation we'll make. But I think it's exactly the right thing for our group, because we don't have an Ashland Historic Association, Jackson County, I mean, Jacksonville and all those places, Talent, all these places have. So we're, like Maureen was just saying, we're not in the brochures that talk about the museums or the associations. So this would raise our profile in a really good way, I think.
Can I ask, absolutely. Why don't we have an Ashland Historic?
I've always wondered that myself, and I haven't got an answer from anybody there.
Let's have some people around this table that might put their heads together.
I think there is, like, I think Terry Skibbe has a group that's sort of a historical,
some heritage committee.
But they've never really had a presence with the commission. But I know they meet separately, and I know that when Terry was taken out of his house, they contacted me very concerned about wanting to make sure we got his photos. So they're out there.
Right. Yeah. But the question remains, there's, you know, I don't know whether the Chamber of Commerce in these towns was a part of organizing museums and associations or different models. But it seems to me, with the emphasis on Travel Ashland and all those things, that we could definitely do more to talk about the history.
Absolutely.
And like Shelby's saying, actually point out especially Lydia Park, which is what's going to be the focus of our next project. But Lydia Park has just so many historic elements in it. It'll be great. So I think this is a huge gift for our advisory committee, to tell you the truth. Not that I want to persuade you one way or the other, but it seems to me that it's a win-win for us, because we don't have staff or you know, the kind of resources that this grant has given to the Jackson County Heritage Association, right? And that's a member only, you said.
It's a member benefit.
Member benefit.
Yeah, it's not a 501c3. It's a member benefit.
Okay, which means what actually?
Not for profit is to support the public. Member benefit is to support a group.
Okay. Yeah.
So, like, a PTA is a member benefit, or the chamber is a
member benefit.
A member benefit.
Well, that's
talking about Southern Oregon Historical Society.
That's a 501c3.
Yeah, so they're different. But that's also why you were saying your group is more insular, because with the information about local sites, right? Because you said...
I don't want to be recorded on this, but I think that it's insular because they haven't connected with the larger community. They haven't figured out the relationship between the cities and between tourism and the bigger,
and
you know, those larger
benefit,
relationships.
As a member benefit, it occurs to me that's not particularly something they would do anyway, to look outside.
I would hope challenge that.
Well, good.
Because every single museum needs the lifeblood, needs funding, volunteers, and a maintenance. So every single institution, every single group needs partnerships that are out there in order to raise donations, raise membership.
So I've been commenting on learning what a member benefit is. And what you're saying is that is attending to whatever the group wants to do.
Yeah.
And your interest is looking outside for more collaborative opportunities.
And also helping that group understand that there's more opportunity, that there's untapped opportunity.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff, do you have any ideas
here
about how to proceed to get Ashland more of a advocacy group?
Well, I think it, you know, and I'm speaking from an absolute place of naivete, but relative to this particular commission, although as an aside, it's something I have experience with is serving on the airport commission before this, and that was something where for a long time there was the airport commission, but there was also an airport users group, and it was not only for pilots, but it was also for members of the community and people that were interested in aerospace education and how you tie into to schools and remember airport day. And it's something that, you know, again, I certainly don't want to speak out of turn, but it seems like something that as an outgrowth of this commission could create, it would just through some sort of ownership and coordination to be able to bring all of these amazing people and resources together in a broad enough spectrum that we can easily go to the Chamber of Commerce and travel Ashland and talk to Kathleen and to Sandra and others and around. I mean, it just, I'll be honest with you. I just know the history here because I've talked to Terry and here and Peter and others and, you know, as far back as I remember, you know, Kay Atwood was on my paper route when I was a kiddo, and I remember boxes and boxes of stuff that she had. It was so cool. Yeah. And I would just love to see one place and whatever we can do as a city to help with that it would be amazing. It's just such a special place. I'd love to see it.
That's the way I feel. Your many years working in the history of Southern Oregon, do you know why in particular Ashland didn't form a historic society?
Well, in the 80s, the 80s was big money from the state, from the county. Okay. To history, and Southern Oregon Historical Society received millions and millions of dollars every year. Do any of you know where Lake Creek is? Lake Creek? They received $35,000 a year through this funding model. So Southern Oregon Historical Society received a lot of money. In about 84, 85, a man named Plunkett gave a lot of money to SOU to rehabilitate the Swedenborg House. And the Historical Society moved in there with an Ashland branch. And that was operating for about 10 years. All of the Ashland citizens flooded to the Swedenborg House, including, and that's the time that Marjorie O'Hara started the Ashland Heritage Commission that year. Yeah. So
I was actually on the board of the Southern Oregon Historic Society when the county commissioners robbed our money. And at one point, next to Trinity Episcopal Church, on the corner there was an old rectory. It's where the Lambeth is now. And at one point, we were trying to get that. It was a very historic property. It had been the rectory.
You got it.
And we were trying to get that. They were at the Swedenborg House. And I, as vice president, sat with the county commissioners, and I mean, it was like talking to a blank wall.
Yeah.
Was that in the 80s too?
Yeah, it was probably, I think it started, but 384, something like that. I was on the board for 6 years. Wow. So, I kind of knew what
they
was
just,
going on.
They just then were not as supportive of.
Well, the state passed something that in 1949, Miss Hanley got the people of Jackson County to vote in a levy to support the Historic Society. And that's when they saved the historic courthouse in Jacksonville. And okay. That was 1949. I don't remember it, I was alive, but I don't remember it, and I wasn't in Southern Oregon. Anyway, it evolved into the Historical Society. When I was first on the board, we got millions of, we had so much money, we didn't know how to spend it, honestly. But it was because of this levy that the citizens of the county had voted in. And I think twice since the mid-80s, they have tried to get some money back.
It's a heritage district.
And we voted on it, the citizens of Jackson County.
So
in the 80s, there was an Ashland branch of the Historical Society in the Swedenborg House. Ashland citizens flooded to it. Al Elsing raised a lot of money. Margie O'Hara, Kay Atwood, they were all Ashland advocates and channeled a lot of resources and a lot of photographs and a lot of documents to that collection. When that museum closed, we lost all of that most of that material. And it's
lost
it from convenient access. It's somewhere filed somewhere
in Southern Oregon Historic.
It's in the, I'm sure, the Historical Society warehouse in South White City.
Yeah.
And that happened when?
Yeah. It was probably 10 years, 84, 85, 86 was when the museum was, and then probably 90 is when it closed. About, I don't really know, but that's, I think, you know, when there was a nexus that kind of pushed, you know, that was a follow-up to the establishment of this committee. That was the nexus to the Pelton House fire, right? Pelton House burned, and that's when everybody kind of gathered together and wanted to preserve. And that was after the Anderson House was taken down on Main Street instead. So there are photographs of many of these times, thanks to Terry and thanks to that project that allowed us to digitize about 1,000 of that collection for the Southern Oregon Digital Archives. I've taken up so much of your time. I feel guilty.
It's really refreshing to talk about this.
Come back for a couple more.
Yeah. I think it's great. I don't think speak to anyone else, but I do want.
Now I know your name. Thank you.
Yeah, the commission too. You're never bored.
You don't want me on a board. You don't want me on a
commission. Well, so I wonder though if we could give a sense of the group, a sense of the whole advisory committee about whether this is something we'd like to see pursued. Otherwise, I would like to see us either go on the record saying this is something worth pursuing, and that especially if it can help organize the data already on the website of the city that needs to be consolidated, and then these other additions. So it would be a really, like Maureen had said to me earlier, it's a great, easy website to remember. It's ashlandor.us/historic. That's really easy for people to remember.
Yep.
And then it would have everything. So I'd kind of like to see us on the record as if there is an interest that someone could make a motion that this is something we'd like to pursue, because we have to
we'll
go
make
through
a
the city.
This is something we'd like to pursue. Yeah.
Second the motion.
And any more discussion on that motion?
I thought we had sort of gone down this path already, that Peter Finkel was going to create a little blurb on every house so that we could put a QR code in front of historic homes so that when people are going by, they point their camera at it and it shows a history of the house. Is that not? Is that
no? I don't think that's
ever heard.
Yeah. Oh, maybe that was.
Well, the QR codes was
in my head.
Used with the first map project for the railroad district.
Yes, yeah.
That was discussed. But I think this gives us the resources that we don't have here in the city.
So the QR code could link to this site. And
right,
so then that takes people directly to this site.
Right.
if somebody, if there's a plaque in front of my house, somebody takes a picture of it, it goes right here, and then they can find out.
Isn't that the idea?
I think I would probably design that as a story map.
I was wondering about
that. Yeah, because if you float your mouse over a story map icon, you kind of get the address and, you know, some text there, linked to a photograph.
And these story maps are already available.
Ash and GIS is like amazing.
Yeah, and
they're amazing. They were the leaders and pushed the county to do more work.
And I don't think it's been given nearly enough of a high profile.
Yeah,
how interesting it
is. So this is just a start.
Yeah,
you know, I want more.
Volunteers.
No, you got enough to do. No.
What do you?
No. Just more enthusiasm, well, advocacy.
I think it's very
say yes. We want
that. I think that's why we have a motion on the floor. Were you going
to
say?
I was just going to ask. Do you have the link, or do you play around on the Oregon Historic Sites map? If you know. I fool around on it all the time.
I'm not sure which one that is. There are a number of them.
It's through the state, but I do it all the time. You can kind of. And anything that's blue is registered as a historical site, and you can click on it.
Is that coming from the Oregon Encyclopedia Project?
And then you can zoom. I don't even know where this is. 11 Beach Avenue. It's just something random. You hit zoom too, and you can click on it, and it will pull up all of the historical information. And there's a link to all of it. Like you can see the picture that's been digitized and stuff. It's just kind of.
And it's for the whole state?
So the whole state, yeah.
The National Register.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's just, sort of built in 1903, Queen Anne, cements, fiber, saying you can, and a lot of times like A's and other stuff from the Hannon Libraries in there with a picture that was taken back in however long ago, 100 years ago sometimes. And it's just a lot of fun. And I was just kind of think if, in lieu of a QR code that's on someone's property or something, that this is public information and it's, referenced.
It's another. But who's going to find? Like, how do you find
it? Well, that's what I'm saying. You'd have to get to this through the historic link when we build this website.
It's trying to locate these fragments that are out there.
And there are probably others that you use because of how you work with information or the economy or occupation. But it's a start. It's just something to build on.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, so we have the fort.
Yeah, George Kramer's great too. Even though he craps about things.
Online, so somebody can either blurb on their house.
Yeah.
We need another $2,000 to digitize photos to put them online, so you'd actually see the photo that was taken in 1974.
Yeah. That was one of my goals when I was working with Terry. I sat with him every 2 weeks for a couple of hours. And we'd go through photos and we'd actually walk the Google map.
Oh, really?
Or we'd fly. That was what, are we walking or are we driving? And we'd look, because he didn't know where these houses were. He knew it in mind, but he didn't know the address somewhere like here. So for a couple of hours each time we would sit there and we would figure out like what the street address was for that image. And that's how we've titled all of the residential images in that collection. So it's, 152 East Main or something like that. And you can go there and there should be a link to like the National Register, entry with its map and its forms and its photos. But there's so much more. I mean, Jackson County Property Online, the National Register coming out of SHPO. The Library of Congress with Chronicling America, the amazing Oregon Digital Newspaper Program.
Yeah, that's on your addition suggestion.
Thank you.
Great. So much. Well, and Derek, if you...
That's something the Public Arts Commission has put together for a guided walking tour with QR code.
Yeah,
and a map of all the public art projects and photos and information. That's an idea of something that can be done.
And so if there's no discussion, so that we can move on, is there all those in favor of the motion to take advantage of the Jackson County, Oregon, Jackson County Heritage Association's plan to consolidate information. That this is something we'd like for Maureen to continue to work on, how it could be in addition to the city website under that link.
Awesome.
I think it's awesome. I'm very excited. So is there, I would like, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? No, why would we? That's great. Well, thank you so much for the time.
Thank
and
you.
Great.
Thank you.
It is.
All your work. I wouldn't have patience.
Well, you have patience for a lot of things otherwise, so that's good. Thank you very much. And I've lost.
Do you want to deal with the ODOT's issue since we have somebody here and we don't have an applicant for
what we should do? Thank you, Derek. Okay, so why don't you get the background if you would? So this would be, we're bumping the staff liaison ahead of you, if that's okay, Jeff.
Of course, we're meeting, Karen.
Let's take advantage.
You bet.
Of
not a problem.
Charlotte Elmer's president.
And I don't think this needs to be super long.
No.
I mean, just as a brief introduction, I think you've all seen the curb projects being done around downtown and beyond. And a lot of them include the crowded rock that you see here. But you've seen it all around town. And I think staff have heard some concerns about that with trip hazards that are created, people turning ankles, things like that. So we've been in conversation with Charlotte, who is the architectural historian for ODOT, about other options that might work in historic districts in Ashland. And really, in talking to her, the options are the grouted rock that we see now, or stamped concrete, either in a terracotta or a cocoa color, which the terracotta is the lower left there, stamped concrete in cocoa on the lower right, or having bark in those areas. I think for staff, our recommendation would be looking at the bark, assuming that we can work out maintenance agreements with ODOT to have the city take care of those areas and keep them weed free. And we also wanted to talk about the possibility of some sort of low water use, low maintenance, not interfering with vision plantings, maybe some small grasses or something that could just fill those spaces beyond the bark. But I think Charlotte's here if you have questions, or she may want to give a more detail than that. But
you're saying the other three options, the grouted rock, stamped concrete, and the terracotta, are the trip hazards.
I mean,
The grouted rock
seemed like a trip hazard.
Whose idea was that?
I mean, I think, and so Charlotte
I can speak to a little bit about the reason why these are the designs that are proposed.
Let me get your volume up.
Oh, okay. Thank you. How's this? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Wonderful. Yeah. So I am the architectural historian for the curb ramp and ADA infrastructure program. One of the things that we are, you know, working on in all of our ADA curb ramp design is that we are designing for pedestrians with a lot of different range of ability, including folks who are blind or have limited sight. And so in order to meet accessibility standards, we have to provide a couple different ways for them to navigate when they are in the path of travel and when they might be walking in a direction that's not safe into traffic. So the accessibility standards that we are required to follow mean that we need to provide something that provides color contrast. So that's why you see that the stamped concrete has this color tinting, so it doesn't look like a normal sidewalk. But then it also has to have a detectable edge, so you see those sharp curb that sort of form these islands of landscaping. And then it also has to have a detectable surface, so the bark is spongy underfoot. The stamped concrete has a cobblestone texture that is raised enough that somebody can feel it underfoot and understand that they're not on a sidewalk anymore. In historic districts where we are being mindful of and accountable for our impacts on the historic character, it's kind of a rehabilitation exercise, right? We're changing these places to try and finally provide a level of access that was never historically available in historic districts. But there are aesthetic concerns, and then there's concerns about what it feels like to move through these spaces when we've made these changes. So having finished phase one of construction this summer, phase two is in design, which includes a couple more intersections in the historic districts. And there will also be a phase three that has a couple more locations in the historic districts. So we're really welcoming your feedback. We really rely on not only the State Historic Preservation Office, but also local partners to make these projects successful.
Ask a question.
Yes, there's a question here.
Question. Are there any permeable brick options that could be used?
From what I've heard from talking to our accessibility standards engineers is that they have yet to find a permeable brick option that meets those accessibility standards of providing a detectable surface.
So I'm just thinking out loud, but if there was a brick that was done in a different pattern or a herringbone and it wasn't exactly flush, maybe some of them were higher and some of them were lower, but at least it was brick. Because I'm just looking, I understand the need for why we're trying to delineate these spaces, but I don't see any, is this grouted rock that we've got in our downtown now, was there any historic precedence to use that? Or is it just kind of that's what was easy? Because it's not my favorite.
No. Terrible.
And it is a tripping hazard for us often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was early on in the curb ramp program, it was developed as a way to provide a hardscape solution. We were hearing from maintenance staff at the state and local level that bark and landscaping is hard to maintain. So they wanted us to come up with a hardscape treatment. That grouted rock was introduced to try and address that problem. And then hearing the feedback about the trip hazard and also the difficulty of executing that design well, that led to the development of this stamped concrete treatment. I will say we are learning how to do this well. And I hope that, you know, we can come up with a solution that works really well for you guys. I'm kind of limited by the palette that our designers have given us so far, but I can absolutely take our conversation back to them and advocate for them to keep working on other solutions. I just don't want to overpromise what they're going to be able to achieve.
Charlotte, I'm looking at your picture of your grouted rock. Sorry, Shelby. And our grouted rock does not look like that. Our grouted rock looks like we're actually trying to grow rocks. Like somebody has has put our grouted rocks in standing up. So they are 4 inches out of the ground. They're like a terrible tripping hazard.
This is in downtown, but I know what you're talking about. There's somewhere it's much more prominent.
Our grouted rock is frightening. In some places, it's absolutely like a rock garden. So I do like the brick idea, though. I mean, why does it have to be something? Because the concrete isn't permeable.
No.
So why not just use
herringbone? I see the difference in the texture, you know, when the ramp is with the plastic material. Could there be some type of grooved or textured or some type of brick that, you know,
looks a little nicer.
Charlotte, may I ask, are there other options that would be permeable other than bark? Could we look at doing loose rock or crusher fines or something like that rather than bark? I also worry about bark being a fire hazard. Concrete will not work in Ashland.
Okay. Softscape treatment that we've used in some communities is a bark mulch, or that's the phrase we've been using. It's been recently, we're hearing a lot of negative feedback about it. And so we didn't propose it for this project, but I could certainly bring it up with our designers. The criticisms that we hear are that when people do try to walk through rock mulch, they kind of sink down into it. And so folks have complained about that. Also, in some communities, it's been described as an attractive nuisance because I'm hearing tales of people picking up rocks and throwing them them sort of getting kicked out of these islands and into the pathways for pedestrians or cars. So it's also not a perfect solution, but it is, rock mulch is something that we've used on other projects.
And if you see in City of Talent, they have some rock mulch along the Highway 99 sidewalk that was installed.
Uh-huh.
It does seem like it has a tendency to migrate onto the sidewalk surface.
Yeah.
So you're creating a
different kind
a barrier for people that are, you know, if somebody's in a wheelchair, they're going to have to get over a rock now.
Just always in the great.
Shelby, I'm not sure I heard.
Work with plants looks great right away at first, but then there's a maintenance and bark.
Grass is pretty simple.
Watering. Shelby, you've had a concern for like I heard. And I wanted to understand what you said wouldn't work. Would really not work?
Maybe I'm
no
misconstruing what I think the personality is of our town.
Yeah.
But I think that we're not only historically conscious, but we're also environmentally conscious. And I just don't think a sealed, stamped concrete screams Ashland.
Yeah.
I think it's, quite frankly, kind of tacky. And
But the really bark isn't necessarily a solution either, you're saying.
Well, that's why I was asking Charlotte, what are my other options?
Yes.
I also like the idea of maybe using some ground covers because I do love plants. And yes, eventually they do look bad, but if we maintain them and keep them up and make that part of, you know, actually put some investment in, if this is Main Street, we might as well be taking good care of it, putting in some pretty plants and maintaining it.
What were you saying something, Eric?
Yeah, the stamped concrete and cocoa. To me, it looks like a bag of black beans.
It does kind of.
And the stamped concrete and terracotta looks like it belongs in Arizona. And the bark with plants, I understand, is messy, and the grounded rock is just a tripping hazard. And I just, when I saw them do it, I said, "I'm like, what is happening? What just happened to her?" It was funny.
Are there other alternatives?
Just somebody had like a wheelbarrow, so they dumped it. Yeah.
So, I mean, the handout I put out there does have the rock mulch, I think, shown in some of the photos.
Yeah. Also, there was a mention of a using bricks or a brick pattern. I will say that so far we have not found a way to do that meets accessibility standards. And in some communities like the historic district in downtown Dallas, Oregon, we are actually removing concrete that was tinted red and stamped in a brick pattern to try and mimic brick. There's a mix of actual bricks, but then that concrete stamped pattern that they've used as an aesthetic treatment in the district, it does not meet standard, unfortunately. So we're tearing out stuff that was just put in by, you know, previous downtown revitalization efforts in the last 5 years. The standards that we have to meet for blind pedestrians are pretty specific, and that is really a challenge.
Is that just because it was stamped, or what was the problem with it? I don't like it personally, but I think a real hand laid brick would be a much nicer option. Why isn't it not conforming?
Apparently, it doesn't do enough to communicate that that's not a walkable surface.
Whoever wrote the accessibility standards as well.
I'm kind of surprised the bark would meet the accessibility standard. Really?
I'm sorry, folks. It's a little hard for me to hear when there's multiple folks talking. Can you say again?
Yeah. Well, how does bark meet the accessibility standards? Just curious.
It doesn't. It tells you you can't or you shouldn't be painting there.
So oh, it's just that.
It means it.
Charlotte, they were asking if how the bark meets the accessibility standards, as clearly showing it's not walkable.
Sure. What I'm told by our standards engineers is that the color of it and then the texture that you feel underfoot if you do start to walk on it communicates this is not a sidewalk.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, just an observation on Siskiyou Boulevard where it was already done. It seemed like most of those barked areas had quite well-defined curves. So you actually have to step down 3 or 4 inches to get to the bark level. And their bark then is also better contained. It's not going to blow around. And I suppose there, from an accessibility standpoint, there must be a distance from that. If that the one that we're looking at there in BART, that's got a curb on parts of it. The other parts are flush with the sidewalk. If that BART was dropped 3 inches, is that an accessibility issue, stepping off, and liability issue?
I don't know the answer to that. I do know that the curb heights are usually set with respect for or with regard to stormwater management. So one of the challenges with these curb ramps is that if water backs up, then the ramp is buried in it's obscured under a puddle and it freezes. So the curb design is often driven by water control. I haven't specifically heard about the height that's allowed between the sidewalk and the bark, although there might be a drawing in the handout that shows how we specify that detail.
So if that curb continued up to the flat area and it was raised to contain the bark, it would also be an indication for somebody who's blind or stick hitting it or it's bumping into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other option would be if that bark was dropped down below the sidewalk 4 inches, that seems like kind of a trip hazard, falling off an edge. So a raised curb would answer at least it would give direction and that you don't want to go up and over something.
Right.
Now, so it seemed like it was successful out on Siskiyou Boulevard. Then my first thought was how much weaves. If it's flush with a curb, wind's going to blow it and people are going to kick it. And so then it becomes a trip out of it. But if it was well contained, it seemed like it would be reasonable. And the idea of planting low maintenance grasses or something in there, if there's enough of these areas, that's a pretty large one right there. Often in our city, those are the responsibility of the owners to landscape those areas past that light pole, it looks like, anyway. So it may not be as big.
And this is right in front of the Water Street Cafe now. So this is one of the recent installations. So
this is in Ashland?
This
is right in,
the stamped concrete are not in Ashland, but this is, mixes right over across the street here. Water Street Cafe is just out of the frame.
Yeah.
The stamp concrete are elsewhere, and then this is just by Dobra T.
Mm-hmm.
Dobra T.
Brothers and Dobra T.
Right, granite and then East Main.
Yeah, and that's quite a contrast to the Siskiyou Boulevard.
And speaking to the size of these landscaped islands, we have gotten more sophisticated in our ability to design to reduce the size of these islands. So I've reviewed the plan set for phase two, and I have not seen any locations where it would be the area of bark or other treatment would be quite as large as the example shown here. We also are, wherever possible, we are redesigning to try and achieve a more traditional flared ramp, because a flare also works to communicate to a pedestrian that they are maybe straying from the main walkway. So certainly minimizing these islands of landscaping is one of the tasks I've set for our design team. And we've made some success at that, but we're not going to fully omit the need for some of these landscape islands. One of the challenges we run into is sort of fitting around, like, in the existing footprint of the sidewalk, but then also accommodating utilities and trying to avoid designing in a way that would mean we have to relocate utilities, which, then you're getting into archaeology and bigger expenses and all of that. So we're trying to have a minimal impact, but it is a puzzle.
So, Derek, do you think, I don't know that we can come up with a suggested alternative per se, but would it be helpful or I'd maybe ask you, Charlotte, would it be helpful to get a sense of what we find as an alternative that we would not like to have for the gravel rock and the stamped concrete, those kinds of things?
Yes, I think for purposes of, making sure that we are doing our best in the upcoming phase of work, it would be helpful to know if the commission concurs with what Derek proposed, the staff recommendation of using BARC, if we can reach a maintenance agreement. And then if there are small locations where BARC is not feasible, like something smaller than 2 feet by 2 feet, which is usually too small for plants to grow. If there are specific locations where we cannot avoid hardscape, which hardscape treatment you want. So those questions would address this upcoming round of curb ramps. Bigger picture, if you have the interest and capacity to write a letter to ODOT that explains what works and does not work about our curb ramp treatment, that level of advocacy is kind of what's needed to improve our program and clearly state why additional treatment options would be helpful. I don't think that we will be able to approve a new design in time for the next set of curb ramps, but your voice would be incredibly helpful as we try to solve this puzzle.
I know that the Bind community is already working with ODOT on the accessibility and the islands. And there are different types of visual impairment. There's low vision. There are people who have no vision and they travel with a cane. And there are people who travel with dogs. And they're all a little bit different as to how they interface with the intersections. I like the idea of the BARC, but I also like the idea of higher curbs. What I've heard from several blind people is that, especially with the dogs, that they find that the curbs, especially the smaller ones, can be a trip hazard. And if they're higher, they're more, you're going to find it with a cane. The dog is going to avoid it. You know, it's, but I know that they're already in touch with, I think, some of the people at ODOT regarding those issues.
Yes, to my knowledge, our accessibility engineers have done a lot of just collaboration and training and work with advocates at the local and state level. We also follow federal standards by the Access Board. You know, people often say ADA standard, referring to the Americans with Disabilities Act, but there's a whole world of professional standards and federal standards that are set beyond that. So we do have incredibly specific instructions and that we have to meet. And in cases where we can't meet our standards, we do have some flexibility. So for instance, those detectable warning surfaces, which are the ones pictured here, are that brick red color. The Access Board tells us that safety yellow is the best color to use because it has the most universal application. It works for the largest number of people. So that's our standard. That said, when we hear that there are other values such as aesthetics and community preference and, you know, the cultural context of a place, we do have some flexibility to use other colors. In that case, there's a process of creating what's called a design exception, where the state agency is meticulously explaining why this decision was made so that if there is an injury or a lawsuit in the future, we can show our work, right? I think that that's about as much as we can find flexibility with the standards. If we move away from a standard or fail to meet it, we have to be meticulous in explaining and documenting why we couldn't fully comply with accessibility standards.
Did you have a comment, Dale?
Yeah, just further the idea of, I mean, BARC, I think, is kind of the most natural solution. But looking at the upper right-hand grouted rock, and then thinking about one that I saw in Siskiyou Boulevard near the market at the south end of town on the right hand side. They put a few of those stones in differently. They were more planted, as was suggested, kind of more vertical. And I could see the function of them in that when cars are used to that and they drive over a bunch of them. So it has to be durable too, at least in some locations. But in looking at the upper right hand grouted rock one, the workmanship on all of it is terrible. So you look like you're getting guys who really know concrete and levels and slopes and things, but when they get done, they're just plopping it in there. I mean, to leave all the mortar on the rock. We have a lot of cobblestone in town on houses and in the parks and walls. And when it's done well, when I look at the lower one where it's stamped concrete, if that was real rock, and of course it wouldn't be all one color. In our case, you know, they'd be all natural and varied in color. And if the workmanship was like that, I think that would be a lot more acceptable. So they could all be, you know, in the 3 to 4 inch round rather than random flats and mortar all over them. And if they're all washed and acid washed, they could look beautiful.
I like that idea, too. So is cobblestone something that you could look at? Or
I was thinking the same thing.
That's what it is, really. They're using cobblestone, but they're laying them flat.
And stamp. I mean, actual cobblestones, Charlotte, is that something that would work?
I know they would still need to be grouted in place.
Right.
And I think, unfortunately, what we're seeing in Ashland is ODOT's best try at achieving cobblestone. I can talk to our construction engineers to learn more about why we are struggling to do this well, but I completely agree. I've been touring around the state looking at the projects that were done in the last 5 years, and there are some places where the cobblestone is done well, the grouted rock is done well, but it's few and far between. The other issue that we've seen is that if there is any frost heaving or similar damage and a rock spalls out, short of finding that exact rock and reinstalling it, you're looking at completely redoing that whole treatment. So in concept, the idea was to use natural materials and provide a texture that was detectable, but we're really struggling. Our contractors all over the state are trying and struggling to do this well.
Again, we do have a lot of cobblestone here in town because of all our in the valley, because of all our rivers and stuff. And you can go to those places and ask for 6 inch, 8 inch, 3 inch down, and that sort of thing. That stamped concrete and cocoa, you know, look to be about 3 to 4 inch diameter roughly, and they are grouted. And if your standard was that the stones don't stick up more than 1.5 inches, or they need to be between 1.5 and 2. For enough texture, just to meet your texture requirement, that it could look like that I mean, it would be very natural with washed, you know, grout lines. And maybe that needs to get subbed out to a separate masonry contractor that does that for a living.
Right. I mean, sure. I'll discuss it with the ADA designers because I don't know more about why we haven't been doing it that way, because it does sound like a reasonable and aesthetically beautiful and resilient treatment. So I don't know why we haven't done that.
Charlotte, I'm seeing the grouted rock is Ashland and the bark is Ashland. So there's two different, is there a way, what you said, there's a next phase and you might not be able to have something approved before the next phase begins. Are we going to have grouted rock or bark, or is there going to be something different? It'd be nice if we could be like uniform in what we're doing, or what is the next phase, the plan for the next phase going to be?
I think that's
sure.
That's
what we've been discussing. Like, that's what we've been trying to figure out.
Get it in before the next phase started. So we're talking about like phase 3. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
When does the next phase start? Next summer?
I believe that's the goal, construction next summer and then phase 3 the following summer.
But we have plans in review now. So, I mean, they've already drawn plans and they're offering to make some amendments for us here, but the plans are well along the way.
So, what are they for? Is it for grouted rock?
I believe the plans have grouted rock now, but they can change in. These options meet their requirements, but it's not something I think where they're going to be able to redo plans that are already drawn and ready to go out to bid with other options that would have to go through a lengthy, complex review
So
process.
to Dan's point, should we say we'll go with the grouted rock, but we want it to be more cobblestone?
I don't know that. I mean, Charlotte could speak to that, but it didn't sound to me like that's something that could be assured.
Sounds like right now you have to pick the least
Well,
offensive.
again, those are cobblestones that have been laid flat. And they've just been poorly, the huge grout lines, the mortar's up over the edge of them. If that same stone was done well, they'd have to be a little more on edge and tighter, have a little more thought involved. They could work fine. You're talking about the
Well,
grout.
I'm certainly glad to bring that as your answer back to the engineers. It would help me if you have the bandwidth or capacity to put this in writing. It will just carry more strength than if I am carrying your message. That description of what this treatment should look like, I think you're right. What you're saying makes a lot of sense. And I would love to bring it back to our designers in the strongest possible form, and really push to see what we can do. I think you could also let us know whether we should be considering going back to any of our phase one locations to make improvements.
Yes,
It's not
please.
something that I can promise we can do, but
Yeah.
we certainly could only consider it if we are asked to consider doing that.
So Charlotte, well,
So,
first,
just to be clear, grouted rock in our in the right-hand corner is the worst example. The one before I even looked at stamped concrete coco, I did think that might have been Arizona or something where you could find lava. I mean, weathered rock that is all the same color. Well, that's what you see it as coco concrete. It's a lot different, but the quality of that work, they took a lot of time to make those stamps to make them look like a pretty quality job. If that looked like that with natural cobblestones, it would be that's what I would envision. So that's a good example of what could be the look if it was natural.
Understood. That makes a lot of sense, and I can relay that to our engineers. They will understand what that means.
So
Okay.
Charlotte, so that we can move towards a conclusion of this conversation, I wonder if your preference would be, which makes sense to me, that as an advisory committee, historic preservation advisory committee, that we write a letter representing our thoughts, and that we could even go so far as to suggest that the first phase be reconsidered in terms of the workmanship and things like that. Is that fair to bring
Yes.
up?
So what are our deadlines, our timelines on
Yeah,
this? Because it sounds like we're already too far down on phase two.
that's where I was at.
We'd rather put a I'd rather put a break on that one for a little bit and get a better solution.
Wait.
I know my project managers would ask for a decision, ideally by mid-December, but ultimately I can also talk to them about extending their timeline.
December 2024, right?
That's
Right.
right. No, but mid-December.
It's the government's
So,
country,
like
so
in 10
it's
days. 10 days. Yeah, if we are serious about wanting to have them do what the staff can't write
I
anything
mean,
at
the ultimate decision on what's done in the right of way will come from the public works director and also in considering the possibility for maintenance agreements if we were to do BART or anything else. So you really are advising the public works
Okay,
director
that's what
and
I was doing.
ODOT in how to move, you prefer them to move forward, particularly for the historic district.
So we would write a letter to Scott Flurry,
You'd write a letter
and
to
it would be
ODOT and
and
copy
to the
Scott.
and copies to ODOT.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the scope of the
Your
next.
role in the ODOT process is also advisory, which is why I'm recommending a written statement. It strengthens your voice, because ultimately I'm an advocate and a liaison for the sort of the historic preservation aspects of the project, But just to be realistic about what I can accomplish, there is the risk that the designers will override us and move on. So the strongest voice you have is the most, would make a difference.
Dale, you had? I wasn't clear on the scope of the work. What locations?
I don't have them all off the top. I mean, I've got a list of them. It's a limited area within the historic district. They've done some now, and then the third phase will have some more historic locations. I think these are fairly close in downtown. I mean, there's some right across and around City Hall.
Pretty much in the
Yeah, they're all going to be prominent locations on Main and Lithia.
The first phase has been because it's highway, right?
I mean, these are all on ODOT facilities in the historic district. So you're talking Main and Lithia and Siskiyou.
So there isn't much left to do, really. Lithia's already been done, or is that going to get done again?
I mean, I think there are some more.
There are some intersections where we may have worked up two or three corners in the last phase, and we will work at another corner at the same intersection in this phase. Typically, what we've done is worked on the corners that had the simplest logistics first, which is often driven by utilities. We have a mandate to move very quickly with these curb ramp projects. So phase one is usually the relatively low-hanging fruit, phase two, the more complicated ones, and phase three. I don't actually know why there's three phases in this case, but that's how it's been presented to me.
Well, Charlotte, it's been very helpful to have your participation so we can think about our next steps. And you don't have to listen to us discuss what the next steps will be, but sure. It sounds like there's a way we can become advocates. Derek?
I mean, I think she's saying you do need to do a letter.
That's right.
Within 10 days.
That's what it sounds like to me.
So, I mean, you're probably going to want to have some indication here where you're deliberating in public and that's recorded, that you can say kind of where you're going, which sounds like you'd be supportive of the grouted rock, provided that it was done with a higher level of consideration to the workmanship.
Well, yeah. So I'm wondering, is that something that can be delegated to somebody to write the letter?
I think you can delegate it to somebody to write the letter. I don't think you can deliberate outside of a public meeting to decide what that's going to say.
We need to establish the specifics.
Yeah, I think if you say grouted rock with better workmanship, delegate that to somebody and say, prepare a letter based on a discussion. But I don't think you can, you can't have a serial meeting via email outside of this to come up with what you're going to recommend.
And okay, so I've heard a couple other things, specifically cobblestone, to be considered, right? Is that the grouted rock?
Yeah.
So that would take care of it?
But also we talked about bark might be inappropriate, as you suggested, with curbs around it, or right?
Higher curbs is another one that was discussed.
The other thing is it just all depends on the scale and the location, in my mind, you know, how big these spaces are, where they are, and what might be appropriate. Is there a map online showing how many more need to be done and what the sizes of the issues are for the...
No, the map online is, I think, too vague to really provide that level of detail. I can share the project locations. Is my screen large enough that you would see it if I shared a map on my screen now?
Yeah, if you want to go ahead and share, I stopped my share.
Okay. So are we seeing the aerial? Okay.
Yep.
Let's see. So the green locations, this project actually includes other communities in the county, but in Ashland specifically and in the historic districts, these are the locations that we are looking at for phase two. Is that legible?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
So you, can you see the street names on? There's a couple on Lithia Way there.
Yes, they're all along East Main Street and Lithia Way.
Has East Main been finished or not?
These are phase two.
Yeah, those are all the phase two locations. So, so you're talking East Main and Lithia in you know.
So some of the yellow ones have then been already done? What's the yellow? Like at Oak, is it Oak Street there? Oak Street was Oak Street and Lithia was done at some point.
Yeah, I'm not sure those are points or if they're.
I think that's just overlapping.
I think that's an overlay of a layer for the.
Okay, is that Oak Street?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that corner has been done. So then we're talking about the next corner up, which is what?
So I think it's just the ones that are denoted with green.
I mean, you've got Pioneer. Pioneer and Oak and East Main near the Water Street Cafe. There and there.
So the green is the one to be done next.
And quite a few at the intersection with Hellman Street.
Pioneer was the first big one.
Mm-hmm. And not all of these locations will require landscaping. Some of them will have a flared ramp that's not creating these islands. It really depends on the geometry of each corner.
Derek, you said that city or somebody wanted the planters.
I mean, I think city staff and looking at the options that were available thought that was the sort of the cleanest option to have the bark.
Yeah. And the contract is given, like it can be done. Like that.
They have to get the maintenance.
Well, I mean, I think the options that are presented, those four things, are things that ODOT has said are options we can choose from. That meet their parameters and that we would have the option to choose.
And we have whoever makes it happen so that they stay looking nice for years to come.
I mean, that's something we'll have to get an agreement with. Is the Public Works Director willing to sign an agreement with the ODOT that the city will maintain them? Most of the downtown landscape stuff is maintained by Parks. So some of that's a question of whether Parks is willing to expand their maintenance responsibilities.
Yeah.
And staff at this point is favoring bark?
I think that's what Public Works and Planning staff had sort of leaned toward.
I agree with Shelby that this is our main, these are our main drags. We should make them be as beautiful as possible. So,
did you have if I had to choose between bark and a beautiful cobblestone, I'd probably still choose bark.
Me too.
Well, I mean, and I think, I mean, our feeling was we've seen what the cobblestone installation looks like. The bark seems better than that.
Charlotte.
Yeah.
There's been trouble finding good crosses.
Yeah. I mean, so I kind of agree with you that a well-installed cobblestone would look great. I just haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there?
We're good. Wait, can you go back to the picture of the picture? Of the examples. So, like Bill was saying, on the stamped concrete, it has a raised edge, and it even looks like the stamped concrete is a little raised. So if we could get the stamped concrete with the raised edge, but with bark, so it'd have the raised edge, right, Bill? Is that what you were saying?
Well, I would suggest higher for...
A curb around the bark to contain it.
And like in this area, having the more turn to...
And for bark with landscaping generally, although often the intersection dictates what happens, like if the trucks make it the corner, are going to roll over it, it's got to be concrete.
Yeah.
So am I understanding that we, having had the broad discussion, that this advisory committee would like to write a letter that recommends a surface of bark with higher curbs to contain the bark. Higher curbs around a bark and that there be plantings. Maybe we could get fireproof plantings. I don't know. But is there bark that's a little bit safer from fires?
Or it could be a gravel and landscape.
It's probably not a fire hazard.
I mean, the issue I would raise for fire is typically when you're talking about bark mulch being a fire hazard, it's because you're installing it to the edge of a wooden house.
Right.
In the middle of a sea of concrete and asphalt, I'm not sure you're going to have the same issue.
It would creep and bark. It's not going to rise.
Well,
yeah.
If there's a consensus around that, that wouldn't take long to write a letter to help with, clarify what we think would be a representative of the city, as well as
this group.
Yeah, as well as the historic preservation.
Well, if I may chime in, I think if what we are proposing is primarily bark mulch with plantings as can be achieved through the city, with if there are small areas that require hardscaping, a cobblestone treatment that is similar to what we did in phase one in the size and the dimensions of the stone, but a superior craftsmanship than what we saw in phase one. If that's our recommendation, I do feel that I can take that to our engineers and probably get that because those are essentially choosing from these approved treatments. If something that's not already available as an approved treatment is what you would like to push for in the future, then I think a letter is what we would need because it's outside of this sort of the tools that we have, right?
So you're saying, as I understand it, Charlotte, you're saying that we wouldn't need a formal letter. You could take back the group sense that the bark is the preference and the areas around the bark, the concrete would be higher edges. And then also the cobblestone where their hardscapes are needed?
Yes.
Does that make sense to everybody?
The superior craftsmanship.
I would only qualify that because, for instance, looking at the grouted rock on the corner there, like why wouldn't you just fill that with concrete and have dual edges to it? It's just the same materials everywhere else. For these little small areas that are square footage of, I don't know, 6 or 8 feet square, it's like, what's the point, you know? Then it's just going to be out there by itself.
If we fill them with a hardscape, it has to meet that standard of a detectable surface and a high contrast color.
But it doesn't matter whether it's curved. If that one's curved, isn't that the indication or the sign that there's an issue there?
I think there's a potential for somebody to perceive a curb as a step and still step up onto it. So this we have to make the surface detectable to achieve standards.
And if that little triangle right there had bark in it, is that an objection?
Is it too small?
I'm guessing that's one that's going to have a hardscape, yeah. Right?
But why?
I think so, because apparently if they're that size, then they're not going to have any success with getting like a lawn or a shrub to root there. That's what I've been told by our maintenance staff. At that point, when we're talking about, you know, bark and landscaping, we would also then be deferring to the city about what they feel they can afford to plant and maintain.
But if that little triangle is 3x3 on each of those legs, if that was bark dropped 2 inches from the edge of the curb, that gives a texture change and keeps the whole thing consistent. And there's a plant in there or just a small grass in the middle of it. It's drought tolerant, doesn't need any water.
True. Okay.
Even if it ends up plain bark, fine. Is the consistency of all the planters then makes sense.
So in small areas, even if they're too small to sustain plants, bark would still be preferred over a hardscape treatment.
And Eric has got something. What are you looking at?
I'm just looking at different brick options that have varied texture.
Oh, different bricks have different textures for a hardscape. But It sounds like.
It would be about as textural as the stamped concrete.
No, I mean, those are beautiful, but there's workmanship involved again, and then how big areas do you do, and then you have contrast.
So it sounds like we're wanting to push for even the smaller areas
Okay.
that we not be limited by the hardscape, but that we put in whatever bark and with the higher curves, right? So what that I think that's a pretty uniform kind of idea. Do we want to add anything about restoring or changing any of the ones already installed?
Would that need a letter if we were looking at addressing phase one?
Yeah,
Let's do
that
that.
would require a letter.
Demo.
A
Yeah,
demo.
I would
Oh.
ask you to specifically speak to the impact on the character of the historic districts. That would be
That would make the most
sort of the
sense.
strongest argument.
As
From a
a
regulatory standpoint, that would be the strongest move.
Okay.
Are these planters ODOT owned then? That's why they're getting done that way. So the city couldn't take it upon themselves to demo those and put bark in. It's
I guess I don't know enough about. I haven't been at ODOT long enough to know the answer to that. Certainly, certainly in most state highways, the infrastructure right, like it's a mix of state right of way and city property. So it's a collaborative effort. What the city does after ODOT walks away, I don't know what enforcement or collaboration is required at that point.
We don't
And if
need
we're stuck with what we got, which looks ugly, what about hiring, getting a sandblaster and blast those that border off of those stones and expose the grout? It would look a lot
paint
better.
them too.
To clean them up.
Seems
Yeah,
that
we can
we could
write a
build up
letter.
these
If that will
for
require a letter. And it's a letter sooner than later.
letters to be consistent.
Shall we
So,
feeling
is
if
there
want to say
anything
something?
else you want to ask
No,
Charlotte?
I'm good. Very patient for this conversation.
And Charlotte, just more of a curious question. The people that did this phase one that we're seeing, I think they were contracted from where in the US, like Midwest or something?
California.
Did you ask where the contractor is from?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Somebody told me today, California.
No idea. And I will say, typically, the city's not going to go back on ODOT facilities and do maintenance on their projects unless there's a section on Ashland Street where we've got jurisdiction. We've taken over jurisdiction from ODOT. They approve a plan to our spec, they install it, and then they hand it back to us with some maintenance money. And now it's ours to take care of.
Like the pavement on
But
Siskiyou.
the facilities that they take care of, we're not going to, I think, have. And we don't want to have other
Responsibility.
projects in the city lose money to take care of facilities that's funded for ODOT to take care of.
Is there any re is can we thank Charlotte for her time and attention, and then we can decide on our next move. But I appreciate that you are going to emphasize both the bark and the use of higher curves, and that the smaller areas don't could still be looked at with bark rather than a hardscape. Okay? Is everybody clear about that? And that's okay. Sounds right to you, Charlotte? You can
Yes,
represent.
understood, and I will take that back to our design team. Thank you
And
so much for spending time on this. I know it's a major impact to your community, and we really appreciate your partnership to get this done right. Thank you.
same, we appreciate the time you spent to help us get better informed. So thank you,
Are we
Obi.
moving forward without letter?
No,
Oh,
we
I
can
think that
discuss
we're
that.
giving her direction, but it sounds like you are wanting to do a letter
Right, we can
to deal
talk
with
about that
maybe
after.
dealing with phase one.
We can talk about that. Yes. So I think because she's taking the main points we're wanting to consider. So real quickly, do we want to write a letter that looks at trying to change what's already been?
I think absolutely. Yeah. I think it's a lawsuit and hazard for the city. And,
yeah.
I mean, it's just, we're just waiting to be sued on some
it's,
of these
points. It's code. It's code.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it should be part of next meeting looked at them and maybe evaluated them together, see whether it's worth writing.
But I think the letter has come really
quickly. Well, no, this is.
I mean, I think the letter would be going back to look at phase one. I think we probably have more than 10 days to do a letter.
I'll go
and
take
I can
a
certainly.
Tripped. And yeah, I could write a letter.
Well,
share it with you, Derek.
Yeah, okay. I mean, the only thing I would say is the. I think what they're looking for, because as Dale said, if they're installed to meet an accessibility code and they've
they
met those requirements that are set as a federal standard, I don't think saying that somebody tripped, I mean, it's sort of the same as somebody tripping over a curb, even though we all agree it's really badly done. But I think the letter would be probably better speaking to sort of the impact to the historic character of the district.
Yeah, and the unity of the local.
Yeah, and we've, you know, gone to the effort of selecting a specific shade of concrete. We have a specific treatment of our pedestrian corridors, and this is something we weren't consulted on that's very poorly installed. I think you could make...
Is that something you have time to write?
I mean, I could certainly take a crack at it based on the discussion here, but I think, I mean, we
would
probably
like
want to have a...
That have... Dale, would you be willing
to a letter?
Letter.
Well, I think we'll look at this as a group, whether it's
oh, so we can wait again. This is not pressure. Is that right?
I mean, I think we could. Yeah, I'll verify. I'm going to be talking to Charlotte first thing in the morning,
okay.
So I'll verify if there's a timeline for that.
Okay.
But I'm guessing, given it's going
so
back,
January.
Yeah. We could theoretically meet in
a
January meeting, talk about it, have a draft letter and some photos of locations.
I think this is, I don't know if this is true or not, but it feels to me like they've changed contractors too. The first phase, what they were doing on some of the stuff down on Ashland Street. Because I also saw them do like installations in a couple days, coming back and ripping the whole thing out again.
Oh, really?
I mean, they did some.
Three contractors.
They did some installations where they didn't do city standard concrete color and had to come out and tear it out. And they also did some that were
not
very poorly thought out, where they placed them to have a sidewalk that on the opposite side of the street, you were walking into the middle of an intersection, some things like that.
So,
I think where they were not consistent with plan or not consistent with color requirements of the city or those.
And slow. Not being
I think the advent of laser levels has made slope a much more difficult thing to comply with. Yeah.
Okay.
Sometime between now and the next meeting, go to, remember where Liquid Assets used to be? It's now Lovejoy's tea room.
Yeah.
Go there and look down to the right, and you will find a rock garden.
Oh.
That is
for the Water Street one.
No, away from the Water Street.
Yeah, or the upper corner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the statue.
Yeah, and you know, that's a bad one. I don't know if you.
They're all three.
So, are you saying though, Dale? Just to clarify, Dale,
just
do you want
to walk by it?
Is it good enough for all of us individually to try to take a look at these things, or you want the?
I want to do a subcommittee and report back.
Yeah, that's kind of what I think. That people who. Is there anybody who's interested in taking? Okay, great. Katie and Delaney?
I think four of us ought to be involved. Anybody else want to be involved?
Sure.
Okay, so great. So I'm not going to be involved.
Who was it?
I think there's enough. It's Shelby.
I think you have enough.
Shelby and
really
Katie
busy writing.
And Dale and Eric. That sounds right to me. And so just sometime in
we want to meet just before an hour before the meeting or
in January?
We're going to do it a week before and then conjugate for one.
So the next meeting is like January 4, I think, or something like that.
Third.
Third.
Or we could wait, though, if you're saying there's not.
Find out tomorrow what our timeline is.
Martini lunch.
Yeah. Okay, so my understanding is we've just formed a subcommittee, and that you will endeavor to take a look at the installations such as they are and come up with a recommendation for changes.
Can you get
it? Can you be there here too?
Depends on when it is.
Yeah. We're going to do it on New Year's.
Yeah.
Find the time.
Sure. I just feel like we should have a few location addresses to look at. Do you have that?
I see.
Okay. Is there, do we want to make a motion about that? I think we make a motion when we set up a subcommittee, I suppose.
We have the power to
appoint. I'm just going to appoint a subcommittee. Okay, bye. What do you think, Eric?
I mean, the only thing I'm wondering about is we're, I think, have a quorum on the subcommittee, which gets into noticing requirements and
meeting. There's four. Is that two? Well, four is our quorum.
Are we still nine or eight?
Okay. Then I think, then you're okay.
It's just Shelby, you, Eric, and Dale.
And Bill. No?
No, I've got a lot of.
Well, I had you on my list, Bill.
A lot of medical stuff going on.
Okay.
Eric, Katie, Dale, and Shelby.
We're saying that we are grateful that there are people who step forward to be a subcommittee.
But you can still come out.
It's depending on the meeting time.
Spend out some time. See if we can.
Okay. Thank you very much, Katie, for bringing that. That was a lot of. But it's, I think Shelby, when you early on said this doesn't look like ash, and is not to mention the hazards and the staff, obviously, that staff had issues too. So, did the staff do you represent your position differently? I mean, as a staff to work with them?
I'll represent the commission's recommendation to ODOT and to the public works director.
Okay,
the public works director is the ultimate say on what can be done in the city right away. And ODOT's the ultimate decision on what can be done in ODOT right away.
Okay.
So it's sort of all those factors being mixed, but it's ODOT's facility. So.
Which is why we're writing a letter. And making a point. Okay. Any other questions? I hope not, because I
have a quick question.
Yeah, okay.
For the subcommittee, if does it matter what if Eric Benetti is like, I can't make any of those times, or what if I can't make any, does it matter? Can everybody go on without the person?
Sure.
Oh, okay. I don't know how though. Like there's all these
things. Oh, no.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
Eric.
Yes, we are.
And we also still have a land use action to look at. So,
really have to keep being locked. So, let's hear. Yeah, thank you for your patience.
No, not a problem at all. I'll be extremely brief. First and foremost, just want to thank you. It's very much appreciated on behalf of the council. I know of all of the outstanding work that
you and this commission.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, our advisory committee.
Yes, it is that we still lovingly refer to them as commissions. You know, it just is, right? That's just been kind of baked into the culture and the values of Ashton here. So the only thing for, you know, we've been, you know, busy on all the stuff that they'll save you just to save time. But one of the things that is coming up that I'm working on relative to council, where I'm going to need your guys' help is, and we've kind of backburnered it actually for longer than we would have liked to, just due to other more pressing issues is the updated 5G wireless ordinance and how that affects historic districts and so forth, public rights of way. So I've worked on a draft, and you know, it's kind of a, there's some issues with it, but we're going to go through planning and we're going to go through legal. Legal has kind of had to stop because we've been working on
other ordinances. Yeah. And so, but anyway, it's going to go, you know, to legal and planning, and Derek and Brandon and crew will take a crack at it, as will Scott. But this committee is commission is going to be critical in saying that too. So when that's ready, I just in there, I just know that I'll be tapping you all and saying,
okay,
please take a look at this review and so forth relative to.
Is there a time frame for that?
We are, years ago. I think we're shooting for having it to be kicked around. Boy, I sure would like it at the end of January, beginning of February.
Oh, okay.
Trying to get sooner, but there's a couple of meetings that have been canceled just due to the holidays and so forth. So anyway, it is definitely, we'll call it, I'll say early to mid Q1.
Yeah.
So, but your input is greatly needed and absolutely appreciated.
Thanks. Next. Well, we appreciate your considering us.
Excuse myself. Something came up.
Oh, please take care. Thank you very much.
A quick question. So,
yeah,
Eric, in the historic district, is there something that's going to be visually impacted?
Possibly. I mean, it's due to the equipment and the and so forth.
But they're closer together and stuff, aren't they?
Supposedly, yeah. It's pretty much smaller. But this is kind of where, and I would be more than happy to speak to this a little bit more and kind of give you some. Nothing has been done, obviously. But just to kind of give you an idea, along with Derek, it kind of give you a little bit of context on what the issues are and what kind
I
of.
I think
the,
that would be helpful.
Yeah, whenever you want to throw that on the
agenda. Because maybe next month we could do that. But
is there a tentative site plan or map as to where these might be located?
In the city limits.
Yes. Yeah. Well, basically, very, very briefly, if an applicant came in, you know, say Verizon or AT&T wanted to submit an application planning in the community development, it would be where they wanted them. And it would be,
they haven't identified where they want them yet.
So anywhere in the federal law, anywhere in the city, any city right away they can install.
Subject to.
So in Bedford, I'm seeing them on rooftops and, you know, in places where they're quite visible.
And remember that this ordinance is specifically for public right of way at this time. However, there is a very much a, please keep me honest here, there is very much a historic district component to it. And I know that a lot of it, we have to stay within our lane relative on this first crack at it of just what would be AMC 13, which is public right-of-way, because it's specifically in Oregon, unlike other states, if you've read about it, where they've done things on both public and private land, where you can do that in California, Oregon is very, you know, it's you have to be very, very careful with the DLCD and planning and AMC 18 and so forth. So this first stab at it is just public right-of-way, but that does very much include historic
district.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
And my understanding is you'll have a separate resolution attached to an ordinance that can get into some specs of design standards. So we have very specific light standards within the historic district that we could say we want to match those if you're installing a light pole.
So they would defer to local municipal code?
It's complicated. Okay. I don't want to take your time, Chair. Gladly explain that.
Would people agree that would be good to get more background on? I think so. Okay, so we'll work on that.
You bet.
Thank you for that. And Derek, we've talked about two things. You were going to talk about the...
You still have a land use action to look at. And then I wanted to mention the December 18th committee and commission appreciation event. That's sort of an informal session at council. And also an opportunity to talk to council about work plans. That's a study session at 5:30 on a Monday. They're asking that at minimum commission chairs attend, but all commissioners are certainly welcome and invited. And somebody from the commission should be there prepared to talk about the work plan. And one of the handouts I put at your table is an email I sent this morning has what was sent to council in terms of the work plan. And that was based on the discussion
at the retreat back in January. So this legal size sheet, the bullet points at the bottom, kind of go through what we sent to council, and that's a summary of the retreat items, as well as we added in before it went this last round, the things that we're doing besides the aspirational goals. You know, still looking at land use actions, having preservation month, conducting the review board, those things, as well as the other things we aspire to.
Okay, so the work plan, it's a study session at 5:30. Is there another gathering apart from that?
It's
Maybe
a
reception of some sort?
I mean, it's a regular study session time, but they're saying it's going to be more informal. I don't know honestly
What that
what the
means?
final details are, but I'm assuming if it's like last year, it'll sort of, there's one other item on the agenda, and then I'm assuming it will sort of break into more and more informal reception.
Oh,
Yeah.
okay. So, I have it on my calendar. I'm prepared to be there, and I think it would be great if anybody else could be there. And maybe we could send, or maybe Regan, would you mind sending a reminder to everybody that they put that on their calendar? Because Derek wrote an email early on about this, but I think now that this is finalized for the study session in this way. So, any other questions about that? If not, then we could move to the planning action review, which fortunately, you may remember in September, we looked at this project, the Martoli's Pizza Project property on East Main. And I thought we went through quite a bit of it.
We've gone through quite, so we don't have the applicant here, but just briefly, review board has looked at this twice,
Right.
and then it came to the full commission in September for pre-application
Right.
review. I think the commission and the review board have been supportive for all those reviews. What's come to you now is pretty simple. Just to remind you, it's looking at just replacing this window with a roll-up window, but maintaining the bar there. So this planter would go
Will be
away.
gone. Yeah.
The planter goes away. The walls are finished to match, and it really doesn't irreparably change the character of these windows that are sort of slanted back on this and the adjacent building.
That's
Um,
right.
so it's again here taking out the planter that's behind the people seated there and just replacing it with a roll-up, just like is in place at Scout over there.
And I think that image is
Yeah.
really helpful because they're out there asking to be able to pull out something on the right side, right? The planter.
I don't believe we have anything talking about pulling out the right side. I think
Well,
they're.
let me see if there was something in here that I read. They would also like the option of removing the planter at the corner window. Well, I thought that was. So the one is a roll-up window, and the new infill window wall will be placed at the back for more flexible seating space. And
Where the
then the
umbrella
new
is.
window and wall proposal meet the design standards. So it doesn't look like they have something on that picture that looked like they were taking. There's no planter on the right side though, huh?
There is a planter over here. So this drawing, where is it? They indicate the planters being removed and end walls are refinished to match, but that's
That's just
that
specific to
section.
that
Yeah.
sketch.
Yeah. So it's just taking out this, filling that in with the new wall to match, and then having the bar and the roll-up window.
Okay.
And the discussion that happened in September was talking about having bar stools out here
Right.
and figuring out how to get a matching level that coordinated here and here, given the changes in sidewalk level. But as it's presented, there's no proposal for a bench or bar stools out here. And my guess is they probably would look at just continuing sidewalk seating.
Yeah. So I think the fact is we spent a lot of time on it, the September meeting, and this is formalizing it as
Yeah.
an application. So Is there any other or do any other comments before we? Is there any recommendations that you want to add to what we've already given to them, which they've reflected? I don't think so. But we would need a motion to approve this.
I'd like to make a motion to approve it.
Okay.
Well, second.
Okay. So there's a motion to approve the application for 38 East Main Street. Is there a second?
I second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, great. And the only other discussion items, you really want to talk about the whatever property that...
I wanted to give you guys a quick update on 774 B Street, yeah. And then we can do review board signups.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'll just tell you. That we do, but I haven't. So 774 B Street, the review board saw a proposal for a very minor modification to an existing porch. This is a historic house, 774 B. They have changed contractors multiple times, and we've had multiple iterations of changes to the plans that have come in through planning and building. What ultimately happened was a building inspector was on site. There was a need based on what they encountered on the property to remove a few sections of wall. They were told to bring back in a building permit. It got looked at and approved. A section was missed that showed removal of another wall. And the result was that when the building inspector went out next, the historic house was gone.
Yeah.
So this is something that would have required a demolition review through the demolition ordinance if it had been caught. But the combination of multiple revisions, right, multiple people reviewing, and unclear plans that all the details hadn't been discussed on site.
So what are we looking at?
So we're looking at what had been a carport got finished off in a garage. There was a historic home here
right
that had, you know, there's a portion of it still remaining.
Oh,
but
that's actually the ADU.
Yeah.
They built up.
That's what?
It was an accessory residential.
Oh, an ADU. Still, okay.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, on the plan, it's a bedroom because it's not approved as an ADU, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
But there was a residential unit here
so
that attached to that.
They're on fire.
And they've now expanded it out a little bit to the front. But, and it's, I think, to be built largely like what was there, but it's.
I actually talked to the homeowner about a month ago. I was walking my dog and she was kind of finishing up. So I just chatted her up a bit and she said, and the house was still standing at that point. And she said, what happened is they were like digging into it to like just remodel the porch. And then they're like, well, that wall's rotten. And they kept moving forward. Well, that wall's rotten too. And so like the whole thing just, it was crumbling.
I don't
what
think
she
that's
told.
Saturation. I've shown that property.
Oh yeah.
And it was actually, and it was going back into the earth.
Yeah. She, I mean, she was devastated.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I don't think she was like an evil
so she was,
person.
She wasn't.
I think
oh,
she was
right.
upset that this happened.
No, I don't think staff's perception is it wasn't anything intentional. It was a combination of multiple project managers, multiple contractors, and so many revisions
yeah.
in response to what they were finding during construction that it just sort of slipped through the cracks.
It was rotted wood, is what you're saying.
That's what she told me.
Yeah, I can attest.
So, but that's for another discussion sometime about.
In the future, talk about the demolition ordinance. I think staff is adjusting, trying to make sure that the same staff, a person that reviewed the initial permit, looks at all the revisions, and that we're clear about it, and we've educated all the new staff on. There is a demolition ordinance
yeah.
and it applies. If you see anything that looks like it may constitute demolition, raise a red flag.
So now we need to make a recommendation that whatever's really constructed resembles what was there as closely as possible. Is that
right. I will look and see. I believe we have more revisions in the file that
we
I can.
Oh, revisions for that.
Yeah, we have some review board. Okay, then we have the review board stuff. Martha.
The plans keep changing.
So, I mean, since we've gone out and seen that this building is down, I think we're on the third or fourth set of revised plans. And it does sound like we have revisions that would need to come to review board.
Is there a review?
You and Dale are.
Okay. So, okay.
So a year ago, what we sat here and we listened to the people who were revised the American Band College.
Church.
Yeah, and so what happens when and a few of the projects that we've worked on, they don't come out the way that we have
approved them or recommended them.
Yes. What's that word?
Well, what on that particular project was there something out of order that you saw?
The street side, the end facing the street was going to have they were going to raise the little roof thing, and then they were going to put a wooden arch at the in roof line.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks good. It looks really good the way it is now. They could leave it. I was just kind of curious, like, what happens when they don't?
I'll need to talk to the planner that worked on that, but I just don't know if they even got a building permit or if they just decided to paint it and do landscaping. So I just don't know the extent of what was done.
Okay. And there's a couple others that I can't think of them right now. That's the one that I walk by all the time. I just was thinking, what a strange thing that we're doing here. Then we go out and I see that it's not happening.
No, a lot of times
in real life.
You review projects and they just won't happen because of money. I mean, it depends on what we're looking at. Sometimes these are just looked at by the commission and staff and get approved. But then if they move ahead with something that doesn't require building permits, they're not being held to the conditions of approval. I believe they're still fundraising for it. So, I mean, it's just a matter of coming up with private money. Yeah, I think Beverly and I met with Public Arts Chair yesterday.
John, the good news is they do think they have a person who's making the challenge, or who's going to donate a significant amount of money to get it started. So that's the latest I have. And now we just go to review board for scheduling.
I can do the 14th. Maureen, I think that you should consider
going down to the 21st.
I think that you would be pretty invaluable.
I don't have the patience this year to listen to you. I really.
Oh, I'm not.
Well, it's nice of you to say. So impressed. So impressed.
Okay, so the review board dates are. I wrote them down somewhere.
They're on the screen.
They're on the screen. Thank you very much. So we're done tomorrow, and I'm going to be out of town.
You can put me down for the 4th, Derek.
For the December 28th?
Or
4th. Oh, 4th of January, I'm sorry.
So the only one I can do is the 14th.
Okay, that would be great. That's two people. And
you did say the 21st also, Shelby. Or did I just...
Yeah, Shelby said the 21st.
Okay. Okay.
I think I'm going to be here for all of them too.
So you could do the one on the 21st.
We have somebody tomorrow. Do I need to? Maybe not tomorrow.
Oh yeah, if you
we have Beverly and Dale on
okay.
tomorrow.
Yeah.
Let put me down with on the 21st with Shelby. Then that will be two of us, please.
Okay.
Thanks. I'll do the 28th.
Where does that leave us?
One more for at least one more for the 28th and the 4th.
But I can help on the 4th. Yeah, at least Eric can be playing.
I think I'll be here on the 28th. If I'm not, though, I'll let you know when I am.
Okay.
What time? That's at 3 on Thursdays?
3 on Thursdays. Sorry. Yep.
So I think we're covered then, aren't we?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this was
But
I'm excited that Maureen came to get us all jazzed up the opportunities. And then I thought the staff person from ODOT, Charlotte, was very helpful. So I guess I can adjourn the meeting after that. I can adjourn. And we'll see you next month. Have a wonderful holiday, you guys.
Thank you. I will be out of town and try to make it remote. It'd be
oh, that would be so, great.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially if we get to hear that.
Yeah, it could be in East Coast for a
while. Oh, you will? Are you sure you want to talk about it from there?
Yeah, hey, well, we'll talk before then because nothing happens quickly in government.
No. Well, that's true.
Is anything happening with the